Welcome to the Full Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 9:40 Greenwich Mean Time. Today is January 16th, and of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio for the various different asset classes. But let's first have a review of what's been happening this week, because golly, it has been an eventful week. What we saw this week was that the vast majority of indices broke the progression of higher lows that had been evident from the December lows. So that was a major inconsistency in this short-term trend as markets encountered resistance at the upper side of their three-month ranges. And we saw the Dow fall towards 8,000, find support above it, and the S&P fall towards 800 and find support above it. Sorry, the Dow Jones actually tested 8,000 yesterday. Both indices finished up today, and we're starting to see support, at least in the very short term, coming in at the most natural level, because those round numbers on both of those indices have psychological importance over the last 3 months. And yes, both pulled down to lower lows back in December, but these levels continue to have an importance, not only because they've provided support in the past, but also they're sort of roundophobic. So, looking at these markets in here right now, we're certainly seeing some steadying. And by and large, Asia had a reasonably good day in here today. But it is very much the same story right across indices and across the whole remit of whether markets are developed or developing, emerging or otherwise. The majority have encountered resistance at the upper side of their ranges and have fallen back towards the lower side and found support in the latter half of the week. There's still very much the question open as to, I suppose, the question that we were asking ourselves 10 days ago was, will they or won't they break on the upside? And now the whole thing has been switched around and we're asking ourselves, will they or won't they break on the downside? Which I suppose is also the nature of range trading, where sentiment improves at the upper side of the range and gets increasingly abysmal the closer we come to the lower side of the ranges. And of course, investors have a good reason to be fearful because the stock markets have been unable to sustain any rally over the last year and more, and there is unremittingly bearish news about the economy coming through, and people just don't know how much of that has been priced in already. And I suppose that is why we're still going through this ranging phase. Looking at how markets have been performing, they have held up reasonably well over the last 3 or 4 months. Of course, a lot of people will be saying that this range isn't any larger than one we've seen previously, and it hasn't gone on for particularly long either. So the arguments, bullish and bearish, are still relatively evenly pegged at these levels. And while there are things to be bullish about, such as low energy prices and the VIX having come down quite significantly, and the TED spread back below 1%, and Treasury yields finding support, at least in the short term, potentially in the medium term, all of these things are broadly supportive of the stock market. But of course, the main evidence that people are looking for is a successful rally, and that's just not there at the moment. So all that money that is on the sidelines, and there is a record amount of cash sitting on the sidelines in money market funds or in short-dated and indeed government bonds of all varieties, then people are willing to accept remarkably low yields, and in some cases even negative yields when you take in brokerage costs, in favor of accepting the kind of risks that are currently available in any other asset class. And it will take time before some of that money will start to flow back into markets and stay there, because the trading strategy that has worked best over the last 3 to 6 months has been that if you see a profit on a long trade, you take it, and if you've got a short position, you hold on to it. And there hasn't really been anything that has occurred to shake people out of that learning experience. So we need to see a bigger rally. We need to see the Dow Jones pushing back above the sort of 9,600 level, and ideally above the 10,000 level, which would be quite a milestone for that index. And in percentage terms, of course, that is considerably above where we are today. And that is the risk that people would take if they are betting on a recovery, because if you want to wait that long, then you will, without the doubt, accept much less risk when markets have sustained moves above their moving averages and above these roundophobic levels of 10,000 on the Dow and 1,000 on the S&P. But the counterpoint to that is that these moves will be significantly above where the market is right now. But with the remarkably bearish sentiment that there is out there and the incredibly bearish news that is coming out, particularly in the banking sector, and we have seen that the bank sectors broke down again this week, and a lesson that all of us have learned over the last 18 months to 2 years is that the banks have been a lead indicator for the stock market, and with them breaking on the downside, then that is putting pressure on the wider indices. So there is still It's still all to play for in here. And as we approach the lower side of these ranges, we really do need these upper dynamics, and at the very least, follow through on that good tail that was there yesterday and relatively sanguine performance in here today. But we need to see significant follow through over the next weeks to indicate that support is coming in at the around these levels. We know what we need to see to give us a signal that recovery is underway, and that means that stock markets, particularly Wall Street, need to sustain a rally. Now, in that event, then we can expect other markets to perform considerably better. In terms of valuations, Wall Street or the US is still comparatively expensive, whereas there are a number of markets in Asia, and indeed quite a few in Europe, where we are in single-digit PEs, and often PEs that are in the lower half of those single figures. And indeed, in Asia, you continue to have relatively high yields and low PEs. Asia wasn't affected by the fact that subprime had been sold to so many of or CDOs had been sold to so many banks in Europe, or that they had been issuing themselves. Asia was hit because of the liquidity crisis. And in any type of recovery situation with equities so low in terms of the valuations in the Asian region, and also accepting the fact that Asia has fallen faster and farther on this reaction than at any time in the last decade, we have to start looking for the types of things that we want to own when this recovery starts to, when any recovery starts to gain ground. That doesn't mean that we rush out and put everything into Asian markets right now, because there is still far too much uncertainty out there, even though we do see some of the best base development formation characteristics in Asian markets. China continues to lead on that side, and had 3 good days in a row in the latter half of this week. Taiwan is also showing base formation characteristics. And these are markets certainly worth keeping an eye on. India is also in this sort of ranging phase. So certainly markets out there to keep an eye on, and we know, because they've told us, that infrastructure development in these markets is going to continue. The contraction in commodity prices over the last year has been quite incredible, and we've seen Industrial metals fall one by one back towards their long-term basis, and in the majority of cases, they have found support above those long-term bases, or at least in the region of those bases. We've seen oil prices fall back towards $40, and indeed quite a bit below $40. It's currently at $35.90. And oil at the moment is showing a rounding characteristic above the lows that we saw in the latter half of last year. And because of the larger rally that we've seen, even though it's been completely retraced, we can now say that oil's base formation development is probably underway. That doesn't mean that oil is going to rally back up towards $150 in February, for example. But what it does mean is that the potential downside is outweighed by the potential upside over the medium term. In other words, it's probably going to be a little dangerous being too very short of oil in here, because the chances are that we are now entering a more volatile ranging phase, which could be relatively prolonged. Certainly, if you look at the back history and you zoom in on times when oil has rallied significantly in the past, it has taken a considerable amount of time before the demand element has recouped and being able to generate a new uptrend that could go back and test those highs. And given the fact that we are in a global recession and there is such remarkable tension in the credit markets and liquidity remains very tight, there remains the possibility that oil is going to go sideways for a significant period of time. If it starts to put in higher lows, and it is potentially doing that first higher low right now, and can sustain a progression of higher lows, then we will have much greater evidence that demand is returning at incrementally higher levels, and that would be really quite positive. But the positive factor is that for the global economy, the inflationary pressures of that high commodity prices we're having on the global economy have been swept away. The fear at the moment is all about deflation. And certainly, the inflationary fears have been sidelined almost entirely. Of course, there are still questions being asked about the flood of new paper that is being printed by governments, how much debt they are adding, and the debt to GDP ratios are going to be quite astounding in the next year. And how are these governments going to pay for it? More importantly, at such remarkably paltry yields, are creditor nations going to be willing to lend at these remarkably low levels? So there are big questions to be asked out there, which look like they're going to be answered in the next year. But getting back to that inflationary question, there is certainly the seeds of a potential inflationary problem being sown with the amount of cash that is being thrown at the liquidity problem. If that cash isn't removed from the system when the global economy shows signs of recovery, then we are in for an inflationary problem in the future. The question is, do we trust the people administering all that cash to take it out of the system in a timely fashion? In other words, risk killing off a new synchronized global economic expansion in its infancy. Personally, I think there is a strong likelihood that they are going to allow the liquidity stay in the system too long on this occasion again, and we could face an inflationary problem well, 3 or 4 years from now. For the moment, inflation is not going to be a problem at all. It's certainly not a headwind for equity markets at this present time. The fact that we're starting to see the TIPS prices bouncing or beginning to find support around current levels is an indication, to me at least, that the deflationary fears have reached their zenith. And also, looking at some of these government bond prices, and I posted a lot of government bond charts in Comment of the Day today. Looking at all those government bond prices, we see that treasuries are the ones that look most like they've topped out. a number continue to hit new highs, but they also are at risk of breaking downwards in a very swift manner if we start to see treasuries following through on the weakness that we've seen over the last couple of weeks. So I think we are now in a very dangerous phase for those who are hyper bullish of government bonds. And of course, in any really big bull move, and this has certainly been an incredible acceleration following more than 20 years of a bull market, we would expect supply to increase remarkably in the latter stages of a bull market, and that is certainly occurring with government bonds. We would also expect people to be incredibly bullish, and there are some very cogent arguments being proposed for why government bond prices can stay higher and move even higher than they are now, and citing the Japan example as a reason why that can occur. It's more than an academic argument because this is probably going to be one of the most important calls of the next decade. If people are talking about the Japan bond situation occurring in the USA, then government bonds will outperform other asset classes for the next decade. Personally, I'm very skeptical of that view, but the deleveraging process will have to occur, and it could take some time. With that, you're going to have bouts when government bond prices are going to be very firm and they're going to also be very weak. What is almost certain is that we've seen an important peak recently, and the risks are now to the downside for government bond prices. That does not preclude the potential for another rally sometime later this year to go back and test those highs. But for the moment, we see that yields are remarkably overextended to the downside. That has been a massive downward acceleration. Government bond prices have accelerated on the upside. And as we teach at the chart seminar, acceleration is an ending signal of unspecified duration. So the accelerations themselves were a signal to us that this market was getting racy. And now that treasuries have pulled back rather significantly, and they were down a full 2 points in here today at 135, it really does look now like that 30-year treasuries would need to push above 138 to offset scope for them to push lower in this environment. If government bond prices are going to come downwards, that is letting the leash out to a certain extent to other asset classes. And certainly the commodity complex is getting more attention. Gold was up $25 today. It's been a very interesting week for gold because it broke downwards from that consolidation around $900 earlier this week, but has found support around $800, rallied yesterday, rallied today. Very good action in here, and it would t need to take out those lows now around $800 to offset scope for this to push back up towards that $900 level. There is two things to look at in the gold price. The first is those higher lows that we've seen in the gold price from $700 up towards now, and they're worth watching. The other is the progression of lower highs from the peak back in March to around $900 in here over the last couple of weeks. Both remain intact, and I am more willing to give the benefit of the doubt to that relatively short-term progression of higher lows because it tells us that demand is coming in more immediately into this market rather than the supply overhanging on top. But we won't have conclusive evidence that gold is about to push on the upside and go back and challenge its highs until it can sustain a move above $900. That's where the fourth lower high is, and that's around that level that we have the moving average. If the moving average were then to also turn upwards, and of course it being a lagging indicator, that is quite likely to occur subsequent to a push above $900, then we would have very good confirmation that gold is in the latter half of this medium-term correction that has been evident since that big downward dynamic that we saw back in March. Looking at some of the other precious metals, we had silver up 84 cents in here. It was down around 10.58 this morning and closed out around 11.28. So quite a remarkable move to the upside in silver. It's also been really quite steady. While gold was relatively weak this week, silver was quite steady and pushed up quite strongly today. Platinum encountered resistance around $1,000 last week, pulled back towards the $900 level, found support above it, was up 32, nearly $33 in here today, and now looks like it's going to go and push back up towards that level. A sustained move above $1,000, I think, will ring a lot of bells for people looking at the platinum market. Of course, all of these metals are best bought following corrections, and it hasn't paid to pay up for these, not just over the last year, but over the entire course of the bull markets that were evident from 2002, 2003 onwards. Taking the longer view, gold has been a remarkable outperformer over the last year, and gold in other currencies has performed also very, very well. When we see gold moving up in all currencies, then we know that people are seeing it as an alternative currency and that there is quite a lot of speculative interest or the potential for speculative interest to move back into it. Looking at the longer term, gold is the only hard currency that is immune from the deprivations of a fiat currency system. That doesn't mean that gold is going to become the standard currency for the world, but it does deserve the attention of investors because it has been a relative performer in times of economic stress, and that's probably not going to change. Looking at the rest of the currency markets, we see that the dollar was down slightly in here. It's back towards 84 on the dollar index. We had that type 2 top formation back in December. You had a big pullback in the dollar. It found support relatively quickly, having become quite overextended, and has rallied back towards the upper side, or sorry, the lower side of that top formation development. That's what's happened recently. If the dollar has topped out in a meaningful way, then it's going to fail below the highs around 88 on the dollar index. There's no evidence that that is about to occur right now, although there's certainly potential for it. We do need to see that downward dynamic and a downward dynamic that is sustained to indicate that the dollar index has indeed topped out and that what we've just seen is right-hand extension prior to this move back towards the lower side and back towards perhaps the 74 level on the dollar index. But what is uncategorical is that, or sorry, what is categorical is that this impressive move that the dollar posted from the summer onwards broke the 3 to 4 year downtrend, and in fact, the downtrend goes back even further than that, depending on how much back history you look at. So we're probably in the process of the dollar bottoming out. But it's like turning an oil tanker, and the economic news remains remarkably weak, and it remains difficult to make a bullish case for the dollar in the medium term, beyond the fact that people look upon it as a safe haven currency in times of stress. But at the same time, the fact is that the massive rally that we've had recently has done technical damage to the downtrend. There is still potential that this market could go and test the lows, could even make new lows. But the potential for a dollar rout, I think, remains slim. And there is, I think, a strong possibility that we're going to see the dollar ranging over a number of years between the sort of 70 and 90 level on the dollar index. It's going to be a very big pattern. It's going to look probably relatively similar to the previous tops and bottoms that we've seen on the dollar index. We've got lots of back history for the dollar index. In the chart library, you can go back and zoom in on those tops and bottoms. They've taken a long time. They've been incredibly volatile. They've all been type 3 tops and bottoms. And it's looking increasingly likely that's what we're going to see on this occasion as well. Looking at those Asian currencies, because they had been, it was a benefit for investors in the Asian region for a number of years that you could buy into Asian stocks and you had the benefit of buying into an appreciating currency in an appreciating stock market. The flood of liquidity out of Asian markets and back or repatriated money back into the dollar particularly made or turned that whole system around where you had the currency falling and the stock market falling as well. So while in the past gains had been multiplied, then losses were also multiplied. There is still potential for these emerging currencies to perform considerably over the long term, and I think it quite likely that we're going to get back into an environment where people will have the dual benefit of an appreciating currency in an appreciating stock market. But a lesson that I think we've all learned is that we need to be vigilant on the currency front to protect our stock market investments. Because if we are now in a phase where we're going to have more volatile currency movements, then there is a strong likelihood that we're going to have more volatile trading in those emerging markets, stock markets, because people will be much more alert to the relative value that they're getting, particularly from their currency positions. So that is, I think, going to be a trend going forward for the next number of years. But we shouldn't forget that Asia is the center for GDP growth in the world. It is also the center for population growth in the world, and it has massive big populations. Massive big populations generally tend to have lots of young people who drive productivity. We saw the same thing in the US following the war with the baby boomers, and we have billions of new baby boomers right across the Asian region, and they're going to drive the global economy for decades to come, in both in terms of their needs today for food and education, and going forward, their need for homes, for education for their kids, for jobs, and their demand for all of the consumer goods that we take for granted in the Western world. There is little doubt that emerging markets are going to eventually emerge, and the per capita consumption of commodities across the emerging world is growing relentlessly, even though it is going to take a big hit due to the global recession. There is a strong likelihood that that is going to pick right back up when we get this problem with the credit markets and with liquidity sorted out so that capital flows to where it is most needed once again. And I think with that, I will leave you for the weekend, but thank you very much for your time, and I hope everything. But I think we're being told we're going to have snow tomorrow, so my daughters are praying for it because they'll get to build their first snowman. But thank you very much for your time.